Hey everybody, welcome back to The Real Expat Wives of Arabia. I just wanted to take a second and introduce my next guest. Her name is Stacy Judd, and I am so excited to share her input on things of living here in Saudi. She is a mom of four boys, four Abercrombie and Fitch boys, ages 6, 2 9-year-olds, and age 11. Yep, that's it. She's got a set of twins. So we have very similar war stories when it comes to talking about having a singleton and then a set of twins behind that. But she went on to have a fourth one, and they are just adorable. And we love her and her husband. They are really great people, originally from Minnesota. They spent some time in Venezuela prior to coming to Saudi Arabia. They've been here in Saudi now 12 years, I think it is. So she has some really great insights, and I hope you guys enjoy. Thanks again for listening.
Hey, girl.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, thanks for doing this. And all the boys are...
baseball. So mm-hmm. They have baseball Tuesdays. That's my night off. And then Thursdays they have a game, so I go with. And then Karoo made the traveling baseball team. So that's on Saturday. So Matt drives to Duran 3 days a week for baseball. But what are you going to do? There's not enough kids in Rustenura to have a team. So
It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, families thrive the way they do with what we have. You just make do, right? Yeah. I couldn't wait to get my kids the hell out of here.
Well, your girls were at the hard age. Your girls were at the age where they literally had nothing. Like my boys are at the age where this is perfect for them. You know, just getting on their bike and going to the rec, and the fact that the rec has a restaurant. Have you eaten at D Factory yet?
No. Is it okay? Or like, it is it insane?
I was totally lame when Matt went and brought Karoo to baseball on Saturday night, and I went to D Factory and I was like, let's just see what they have. And Walker got this double cheeseburger he was super happy with. Brooks liked his burger. Crosby got chicken nuggets. I got like a shrimp and avocado salad. It wasn't like amazing, but it was 30 SAR, and it wasn't junk.
Right.
And they have a coffee shop in there, and their prices are not that expensive.
That's great. So back in the days, like before COVID, they had like a little snack bar, and it was like, you know, like frozen patties and like hot dog. Like they can get french fries.
Yeah. We've been here long enough that I remember that.
The girls loved that, and then COVID hit, and then there was nothing.
I think that's just it. My kids are at the age right now where they love it here and it fits them. But your girls got to the age where as soon as they hit a certain middle school age, this is not a good place for them.
Yeah. And then COVID made it really hard too. Cause it was pretty much like their seventh grade, like the end of their sixth and like their whole seventh grade year. And then by eighth grade, COVID was still over, but they were still mandatory masks. And it was like over, but not over, you know? And then, if I could have sent them out in eighth grade, girl, I would have.
They're happy. They both like their places. Everybody's good.
Deja fractured her hip.
Wow.
So she hasn't been able to do her cross country season, and she's just been healing up from that. Yeah, she had like a hip injury last year. It was bursitis. Come to find out, like over the summer, I got her like an MRI and they diagnosed with bursitis. And so I got her some physical therapy, but she was also training in the summer too. We got her with this really good coach. And so I think it just never like really healed is what happened. And then once I was like, okay, she can't train. Like this bursitis takes months to heal. And then she couldn't go back to her preseason because like when they're in sports and boarding school, they're supposed to go back early for their preseason. For whatever sport that they're in. And she couldn't do that because she had to finish up like seeing physical therapists and getting some more rehab for her hip. I wasn't comfortable sending her. I mean, she couldn't run anyways. Yeah, she was. So the school was aware and they're like, okay, well, we'll keep her in the trainer's room. So there's like a trainer, department where like they do PT on kids and help. Like after they're running, they can get ice baths and they can get like wrapped and taped and like, they have like if it's a school that's like pretty up and up on sports, they'll have like some kind of, you know, like physiotherapy and like trainer and someone that knows what they're doing. So she's just been working with that person, helping with other athletes in the meantime because she can't physically run. So that's been good for her. But all of a sudden we got an email and they're like, yeah, she was like sprint, like playing, like sprinting, but like with like her friends. And we really think she might have broke her hip. And I was like, what? And then, so then the x-ray, they're like, yeah, we got our x-ray and it came back and it shows an avulsion fracture. So I looked at, like, I was like bawling, like freaking out. Cause I'm like, holy, holy damn.
Like, that's,
I
got like a 9 year old woman.
I know. I'm like, why is she 15 acting like 80? Like, or, like we were, no joke. We were in the grocery store like over the summer and she had to like lean on the grocery cart to like walk. And I was like, okay, this is just weird. I mean, she does have very narrow hips. Like her hips are super narrow. And then all she, her growth plates aren't complete. Like, right, like 15, 16 is like right when the growth plates like finalize in terms of being completed. And so, you know, being weak around like the ligaments and stuff, all of that like played into it. And like her growth was like, her growth was insane over her ninth grade year. Like she grew so fast, so much. I think that's also what contributed to like her little fainting thing. She kept her autonomic nervous system was just like going insane. She would get like tachycardia and then pass out. So that was her ninth grade year. And now it's her 10th grade year. She's got these hip issues. And I'm like, oh my God. But you know what? She's like thriving so well. Like she's been on the crutches to like give it rest and whatnot. And so she's going to continue to rest it until she can start. I mean, she's, and then, you know, like, you know when you're like a surfer and your arm gets bit off and you go back into the surf, like to surf
again?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah, I know what that is. Of course. Yeah.
I'm just like, Stasia, aren't you afraid to run? Like, because you've like already broke your, I mean, you've technically fractured your hip already. And she's like, no, I'm ready to run, Mom. And I'm like, oh my God, why?
Well, come on. You can relate. You know that you've been injured dancing and you ended up dancing again.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I remember like, you know, I had a pulled hamstring once that took like so long to, it eventually heals. It just takes a while, right? Yeah. It's tough when they're in boarding and they have like injuries or they have like health issues because you're so far away and you just got to kind of like surrender, like totally surrender. And the schools are great. They actually do a really good job and they've been great with her. So, and she's doing so well academically. We actually got her started on Focalin because she was diagnosed with ADHD like back in like seventh grade. And I finally caved and I was like, okay, fine. Let's just try some meds. And she's doing so well. She's like, Mom, I really could have used this back in middle school. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
I don't know. We keep going back and forth on that one with Karoo. And I'm not at any time ready to give him drugs. So,
right. That was me. That was me.
I mean, when he's older, old enough, high school age, and he's part of the conversation and part of the choice, to me, that's different than middle school and you making that choice for your kid. I mean, obviously, if they're all out failing and it's affecting their social and emotional well-being, that's one thing. But if it's right, just for focus and I don't know, I.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I am so against like pharmaceuticals. So but I've had to really just kind of adjust my mindset and she is, you know, she is 15 now. I held off as long as I could and it's actually working out really well for her. So I'm happy for her and it's not something she has to take every day. She doesn't have to do it on weekends or on breaks. It's just really for her school days and it's a really low dose.
That's awesome. It's called
Focalin. Yeah. It's something they usually try prior to trying. Well, first so your son's been properly diagnosed, right? Like he's had a proper assessment.
No, because Matt and I don't want to give him anything, so we figure what.
Oh no,
point.
No, no.
Well,
you can get the assess. Well, the here's the main concern I was wanting to avoid was that a lot of times these kids that you need to have a proper and the ADHD assessment that they do on them. It's like it's by a pediatric neuropsychiatrist. Pediatric neuropsychologist has to do, and it's like a 4-day thing. They go in for like several hours for like 3-4 days in a row, and they do all these different types of.
It's not like here where you just make an appointment and then you basically walk out of the office and he says, okay, yeah, you have ADHD.
Yeah, no, it's a neuro. I'll have to look back at the name, like the name of the assessment. And insurance, you know, covered pretty much most of it. It wasn't that big of a deal. And you know, and he's like, she fits criteria for ADHD. He's like, she's the smaller of the two twins, though. So it could be like her prefrontal cortex from just being like,
sure.
Yeah. From being like 4 pounds at birth. And then, you know, and her impulsivity and all that is, you know, kind of plays into that. So we were like, okay, thanks for that diagnosis. We'll sit on this for a bit, you know. And he was just like, you don't have to give her meds. He's like, you can do all these. So there was like a plan. They give you like a plan so that the school can like follow, like, okay, here's some things we need to remember with Stasia. We need to repeat ourselves. We need to like go over things more often. And like, you know, medication isn't like forced. It's just kind of like, here's the diagnosis. You do what you want with that as parents. You guys.
Yeah. Can oh, that's good. Cause I've had a little, I mean, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I feel like medication gets forced more often than not.
Yeah. And then, so here's the other thing is that if they're not properly diagnosed, so say they just have anxiety, say they're just anxious, right? And then, or they're just boys, you know, like whatever, you have boy energy and you're like off the charts, bouncing off the walls, and you have a lot of energy. If you're not properly diagnosed and then given those types of meds, that's where the problem comes in. A lot of kids are just they have anxiety. And because right. ADHD and anxiety kind of can present the same.
Yep.
So that's why getting properly assessed and given the right assessment so that you can determine, you know, what it really is prior to any medication introduction. That's really important. Yeah. So we sat on that diagnosis for like 3 years, 3-4 years until we were like, okay, let me try something.
Yeah. I don't know. As time passes, if that's a road we'll consider with Karoo, I don't know. I don't see us going down that road with any of our other kids, but.
Like over the summer you could probably check out pediatric neuropsychiatrist is the name, and then they run the full assessment.
I like the idea of sitting on it for a few years.
Yeah, no, for sure, because I was like huge with supplements, like DHEA is, you know, the DHEA omega, those types of fish oils and fatty acids are really good for kids, but that are very neurodivergent. So I was giving her like high quality, like magnesium, DHEA. She was on like all kinds of supplements, like, you know, cause I'm always like, let's try supplements and diet, you know, diet's hard cause they're going to eat what they eat. You know, there's other things that are online that are for ADHD, but they're non-pharmaceutical. They use other things, you know, there's all kinds of things you can try before you go like the pharmaceutical route, for sure. Does he swallow pills?
Yeah, all my kids will swallow pills. That's especially if they're little. But
have you tried like a good DHEA like fish oil?
I haven't. And his diet's not that great either. He's a boy. He's carbitarian. He doesn't eat meat. He's also not really into vegetables, so it doesn't help him. He doesn't do himself any favors.
I know. Stasia's diet's complete crap. I mean, it's like unbelievable how her metabolism and how she doesn't even get sick that much. I'm like, Stasia, how do you eat like this and like stay so healthy? So if he's not eating meat, then he probably could use some Bs, like B6 and B12. And
yeah, he has those in his vitamins, and I give him vitamins that have fish oil and that kind of stuff in it because of that. Yeah. And so, and actually, honestly, we haven't even, this is not B12, but we haven't pulled our whole milk either. Cause I even want him to have fat. I want him to have normal healthy fat. So he's still even on whole milk.
Yeah. 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 I mean, if he's not reacting to the dairy in a bad way, I don't see how, I mean, that's fine. If he can handle the dairy, go for it. I mean, I think the dairy here is like so good in Saudi.
I don't know. I don't touch it. So.
It's yummy. It's like the best milk I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
They complain when we're from Wisconsin, so there's good milk in Wisconsin, but they do like the milk here better, I think.
I've heard they treat their cows really well here. Like they're kind of like VIP. They get like really nice treatment. I think, yeah, I know. I like, there was like a video on it and everything, like, which could affect milk quality, I assume. Because they're very like kosher, not kosher, but halal.
Yeah.
What did you do prior to coming? And like, I've had the opportunity to listen to, Matt's not too involved anymore, but like the International Teacher Podcast. I was so excited because like the first few ones, Matt's able to like tell his story. So like, I kind of know a little bit about like Venezuela adventures a little bit. Now I get to hear it from you.
Perfect.
And what your deal is. So, like, what grade are you teaching this year?
I'm in fourth grade this year. It's my fourth year in fourth grade. I think it's my fourth.
Oh.
And this school, anyway.
It's such a good grade.
Yeah, I like it. I love it. They get, like, more into literacy. It's at a higher level. They pretty much know how to read. They're just improving their reading skills. And they take off in their writing, and they really take off in their math. It's a big math year.
And then when you guys moved here, what were their ages?
When we moved here, we just had Karoo, and he was 13 months.
Whoa. Oh, my God. Are you serious? I did not know that.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been here?
So we're on our 11th year. Because Karoo is now 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. And then so prior to this, you guys were, did you go back to the States first, or were you in Venezuela and then came straight here?
We were in Venezuela and we came straight here.
Okay. And then you were in Venezuela for how long?
5 years. We were in Venezuela 5 years. We signed a 2-year contract, and we were only going to stay 2, and 2 turned to 3, and 3 turned to 4, and then we got pregnant with Karoo, and we were going to go home, and then we called the, like, local daycare and got on the waiting list, and then after I was, like, done getting Karoo on the waiting list, she told me what it was going to cost me, and I was like, what? And I hung up the phone, and I was like, Matt, I think we need to rethink our decision. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to work to pay for daycare.
That's like being in the U.S. Yeah.
So then we went to our boss. We had told we were going to quit because we were pregnant. And then our boss was like, yeah, you can stay. And so he let us stay. So we had Karoo, and then we stayed 1 year. And that was our last year, fifth year.
Yeah. So what made you guys pick Saudi?
I wouldn't say we picked Saudi. I think Saudi kind of picked us.
Yeah.
We had 2 job offers. One was Saudi and one was Tokyo, and we were deciding between the two of them. And the guy at Tokyo was like, I can't really help you, like, with quality of life with your child, because you'll just work for the school, and we don't offer, like, programs for young kids. And so you'll just put him in a local daycare. And Matt and I are like, oh, that sounds awesome. He'll be fluent, and I mean, he'll catch, you know, he'll see, hear all the Japanese right from the start, and he'll just grow up bilingual. And then the guy, and then we were like, and what about the living situation? And the guy was like, yeah, 1-bedroom apartment. Maybe we'll get lucky and get you a 2-bedroom apartment. Yikes. And Matt and I are like, are we going to have any more kids? And Matt's like, I don't think I'm an only, we weren't going to have any kids. We didn't want.
What?
We weren't planning to have any children. So. Then, but once we had Karoo, surprise, then we were like, well, no, we're not a 1-family. I think we want a sibling for him. And so Saudi was like, yeah, you can live here. We'll give you a house. You can grow your family. You can work. You don't have to work. So they were like, you don't even have to work. You can just, Matt can have a job and you can stay home. And I was like, no, that's not really for me. I want to work. And so we took the job knowing we'd get a nanny and that I'd be able to work.
Right. Yeah. So, like, all the boxes could not, like, checked.
Yeah. It was a much better choice for our family. And then we came to Saudi thinking, again, like, maybe 2 years, or they presented us with, oh, if you stay 5 years, we'll give you a little bonus, you know, 5 years. Okay. Maybe 5. Well, then we had twins. Yeah.
So when you got pregnant with the twins, like, I think I've asked you, cause, like, I've got twins too. Yours are fraternal or identical?
Mine are identical.
Okay, so it was kind of like in your family?
No. I think what happened is I had the contraceptive in my arm, and they wouldn't take it out here because their policy here is they'll only take out what they put in. And
the next one on.
And so when we went home at Christmas, my gynecologist, who I was just seeing as a routine checkup, I was telling her that, and she's like, oh, I'll just take it out for you. But you won't get pregnant. It's going to throw your whole body out of whack because basically I'm pulling chemicals out of your body that are slowly released. So you'll have, like, a forced bleed, and then you'll cycle eventually. And I think that I probably was pregnant the day she pulled it out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Every time I stopped birth control, I was pregnant like the next month. So I get it. Yeah. When they're like, yeah, sometimes birth control will suppress your fertility. I was like, yeah, that didn't happen with me for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, so, okay. So that brought you from one kid to three kids.
Yeah.
And then, so I always say people that have more kids after twins are like legit certified crazy. You know, you guys are good.
Well, with your none of our kids were, I mean, none of our, we can honestly say none of our kids were intentionally planned. I mean, we didn't go out to say like, oh, we're ready to be parents. Let's start a family. Right. We just, I mean.
For sure.
I can't imagine trying to get pregnant and not being able to. But on the other end, getting pregnant when you're not trying to is kind of a bit of a nightmare. When we found out we were pregnant with Crosby, also not trying, also trying to prevent it, Matt didn't crack a joke for 8 months.
Oh.
And you know Matt, so you know what a big deal that was. And for like the first 3 months, I think he cried every day. We were like, the twins were such a crazy thing. They're such a roller coaster. But it was good for us because I tell him, you know, I think God gave us Crosby because Matt and I were not on the same page with Carew. You know, new parents, I'm way laid back. He was way helicopter. And then you have.
Really?
Yeah. Very overprotective.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you have twins and you have a toddler. So when the twins were born, we had three kids just like you.
Right.
And so who are you going to chase? Who are you going to run after? And so Matt had to. Yeah. I mean, are you going to chase the two-year-old? What crying kid are you going to pick up? You'll have three kids. Like his saying for the first 2 years after the twins were born is somebody's always crying in our house.
I know. Yep. Yep.
And then we just got out of that stage. We were just, the twins were just about to drop their nap and we found out we were pregnant.
Oh my God.
But I wouldn't change it for the world.
I know.
If I'm being honest, having Crosby after the twins was the best blessing for us.
Because you're like, I can handle this.
Well, we never got to really enjoy the twins. It was all business. It was time to feed, time to change, time to sleep.
Yes.
Got to play with the older brother. It was it was so structured and so business. And once Crosby came along, it was like, oh, look at him smile. And oh, I mean, I know we did that with the twins, but it was.
Right. You could take your time a little bit more.
Yeah.
And plus, the good thing about Saudi too is that you had some help. I mean, so like how I think about like, man, if we moved here sooner, you know, when the girls weren't as old as they were when we moved here. I think about, how awesome would that have been to have an extra set of hands, you know, with a toddler and two twins.
It was great. So when we moved here, we had an Aramco husband's wife help us with Carew. And Tita was amazing. She was such a blessing. She was like a grandma who took care of Carew so well.
Aww.
And then her husband retired and they had to move. And so we actually had a transfer, somebody who was living in Duran, who moved, we transferred their nanny and she was from Ethiopia, Amira. She was a baby whisperer and she was, she loved babies and she was amazing with babies and she could handle the twins like nobody's business. And then she got married. She went to Ethiopia and got engaged on one of her repats. And so we lost her. And then we got Angie, who's still with us and she's been with us since before Crosby was born. And so she's been with us for like 7 years already, eight.
And I mean, it's like she's part of the family.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. But like when y'all travel, the nanny doesn't come with you.
So when the twins were little and Crosby came along, that first year that Crosby was born, she came home with us just because we lived on the lake and even with two people and then you add kids that don't know how to swim and living on a lake. Plus Angie has two kids in California. And so she was able to go see her kids. And she came home with us, I think the first 3 years. And it wasn't until COVID, and then after COVID, she stopped coming with us, which is fine because we don't need help now that the boys all know how to swim, and, you know, we're fine now.
And it's like, you're so hands-on though, too. Like, both you and Matt are such hands-on parents. It's funny how, I mean, I don't know what people think when they're like, oh, but they have a nanny, right? And it's like, well, yeah, but it's not like because you have a nanny, you're like laying on the couch, like chilling.
You know, my nanny, Angie, what is amazing about her is she's morphed and changed as we have. So like when the twins were young and she first moved here, it was all about childcare. And as we have grown and everybody's gotten older, she's now like really into cooking.
Oh, which is a huge help. Oh my God. Four boys.
And plus so Matt. Oh my gosh. Matt jokes with her, like literally she's going to run a restaurant someday. She's so good. Her food is so good. And
that's fantastic.
And we have pretty specific diets. So I'm gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, egg-free. And
you're one of those.
I am. I'm guilty. Yeah. So she rolls with it and she tries new stuff and she's so good.
That is such a huge help. Oh my goodness.
So when we leave Saudi at whatever point in that happens, that's what I want to be. I want to be Angie, my nanny. When we leave here, I want to cook and I want to just learn to take care of my family. I wanted to work when we came here, but when we leave here, I think I'm more interested in taking care of me.
Right. So you were teaching in Venezuela as well, right?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I got into a program where I could teach overseas. And so in college, I taught in Costa Rica. And that's how I discovered that there was international teaching.
Right.
And then when I, after college, moved back to the States, I actually wasn't quite ready to be an adult. And so I wanted to live in the States. I didn't really want to go international yet, but I didn't want to live in the States. So I moved to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And then I lived in Alaska for a while, and that was great. I loved it. I'd go back in a heartbeat. Right. And then I moved back to where I'm from, Minnesota, to get my master's degree, and I started teaching. And then that's where I met Matt. And then Matt and I were kind of like figuring out life, and I wanted to go back overseas and he didn't. So I kind of thought we were just going to go separate ways, honestly.
Oh, wow.
And that's where I thought we were headed. And then he came with me to a job fair, just like, let's see it. Let's try it out. Mm-hmm. And we left that job fair with the job to Venezuela. And then that was it. We got married and from Venezuela after 5 years. Then we came here to Saudi and we've been here now. We're on our 11th year.
So like I was not, and I love listening to that international teacher podcast because I did not know how cool like the international teaching community is. Like there's so much available. I guess probably way better now than there was back when you guys started. In terms of like resources, the job fairs are like a big deal because that's kind of like, you know, you kind of got to like get to the job fairs to get exposure or to see like which jobs are available, right? Because I think it's like an inner circle. It's like an
yeah, it is. It's really like who you know and who you know that they know. And it's cool now because it's morphing, because now they do like pre-interviews and they make a whole list of people that they want to interview. So now sometimes you go to a job fair just to get like on their mailing list so that you can get interviewed a year or years down the way. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not as easy. Like when you walk out with a job, that doesn't really happen anymore.
No, that definitely does. Like you go to a job. Oh, okay. Definitely do. But sometimes like, even though if you're walking out with a job, you can go there and interview for a school that you would like to work at 5 years down the road just to get in their database.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, you know, like you guys have to, as you change, your needs change as a couple, right? Or as a, you know, single as well. But like, as you morph into different stages of your life, it's like, oh, okay, which teaching job is going to offer us the best package, right? Because some of them don't offer everything you're looking for or need. So then you're kind of like, well, then you have to choose, right? Between, but if you don't know, you don't know. It's like, and it's so hard sometimes to know on the other side. If you're in a different country, you just don't know what it's like until you get there.
Right. And like Matt and I, for example, when we went overseas, we didn't have kids. So, you know, when we took a job, our own children's education wasn't part of it. It was right. just like, let's take this cool job. It's on the ocean. And, oh, we can scuba dive here and we can go out with our boss who owns a boat. And this sounds lovely. I mean, of course, we were going to work. But now yeah. it's different. Now we have kids. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Now that changes the game.
Very cool. So how was it like how was it different between Venezuela and Saudi? Are there similarities or like
We laugh because when we took the job in Saudi, for example, we were interviewed and one of the guys was like, oh, you want to see where I live? And he shows the beach, like the Rostanura beach, and Matt and I are like, oh, yeah, that's beautiful. And you know, because it really is. And Matt and I are like, but right now we live on a marina in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right. Right.
So we're like, we're losing our yachts and for like really a sand and like we have coral reefs. And so it was interesting. Like in Saudi, every time we went through the gate, or not in Saudi, in Venezuela, every time we went through the gate to get to our apartment, we'd ask the guards because it was a guarded thing. ¿Tiene luz? Do we have light? Meaning, is there power? And so living in Venezuela was crazy because you would have so many times without power and then no power. You'd finally get the power on, but they'd shut off the water.
You know? Wow.
And so like to do your laundry, you needed power and water. So you had to make sure.
Wait.
And we tried to have, I don't know if you ever heard this on one of Matt's podcasts, but we tried to have with some friends of ours, 100 hours of power party, like 100 hours of power, let's have a party. And we finally hit 100 hours and we went to our friend's house and we walked in their house and sat down and the power went out.
Oh my gosh. And so like you couldn't determine when. It was random. Yeah. It wasn't yeah. like it wasn't timed so that you knew. It would just happen.
Yeah, it was totally random, totally not scheduled.
Oh my God, and so that was crazy. Drive me insane.
And
I would go ballistic.
Your laundry would pile up. But then again, we like had a nanny that would help us out. Eventually we discovered like we can't figure. So when the power was on, when we were at work, then she would come in and do laundry for us and stuff. And that was super helpful. So when we took the job in Saudi and people are like, oh, it's a hardship post. It will be hard. Matt and I were like, you don't know hard. Like, like if you needed and this was. In Saudi or in Venezuela, this was even before it got really bad. Like this was still when Venezuela was kind of okay.
Okay.
Like if you needed antibiotics, you might have to go to 6 pharmacies before you would find a pharmacy that had antibiotics, or you might not be able to find it. So you'd have to find somebody who could work the black market, who could get it for you. And so it was so stressful because the day in and day out things that you would need, you couldn't get.
Wow. And so you wouldn't go back if you had the chance.
I loved the country. I loved the people.
Right. Not to live.
You know what? The people who have gone back have been telling me that Venezuelans like that went to Caracas this summer, that it's better now than it was even 5 years ago. And yeah, I was talking to somebody at work the other day and they're like, no, it was so nice. I felt so safe. We had power the whole time. But the cost of living is so bad for the people who live there. It's just, I feel so bad for that country.
Gotcha.
So no, yeah. Saudi is 1,000 times easier for us. We have health insurance that covers our costs. We have a clinic. We have... I mean,
right.
My mom grew up when Karu was a baby and there was no formula and there was nothing. So what are you going to feed your baby? Like we would go to like 6 different stores just to find some sort of something to give him. It's good here.
Crazy.
Yeah, but it has its issues.
It has its own challenges.
I still haven't managed to get my driver's license. Not that I don't want it. Not that it's just like,
girl, it's fine. Go try. No one's going to stop you. It's fine.
I'm just so busy at work and I don't want to take time off of work to go get my driver's license. And then I had everything already. I had the eye test, the blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And then like they were closed for appointments. And by the time they opened back up, everything expired and I had to redo everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like the story here, right?
Yeah. Yep, three times. It's got to take three times for something to. But I tell you what, I drove around on my U.S. license for 2 years, I think, before I even got my Saudi license. And I have not once been asked to be shown. I've never pulled out my license out of my wallet for anybody, for any reason, for anything.
Yeah, I need to, because Matt's driving the boys to baseball in Duran every day. So I need to, or 3 days a week, I really need to, like. But then I can't have my nights like tonight where I'm in the house by myself.
Yeah, sorry. Not going to get our license.
Have you gone? Have you done the drive to Dubai and Abu Dhabi from here?
No, we have only driven to Riyadh and then, of course, to Bahrain. And honestly, like, Dave could not be more happy when they were like, women can drive. Because, like, he hates driving here and I'm like, he just doesn't have patience and I'm chilling. So he's like, he's always like taking a nap while I'm driving. He loves it that I can drive. I haven't even been to Jeddah. I haven't been to Al Ula. I haven't been to so many places, but I'd have to go alone. Cause Dave's like has zero interest.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd have to, no, but I know a lot of people that have gone to like, they've driven to Qatar.
Yeah, well, we have, you know, with a family of six, it's much easier to get in the car and drive somebody and drive us somewhere than it is for us to like six airline tickets and then a car that fits all six of us, like a taxi. So we love driving. And I think we've drove to UAE three times, maybe four. It's a nice drive. Yeah. And it's about 7 hours to get door to door from here to Abu Dhabi. And
that's it. That's not bad.
Yeah. And it's nice roads. It's like they've redone them and you can go really fast. So Matt loves them. And it's really not. And then you have your car, so you don't have to deal with a cab or a taxi, and everybody fits, and everybody has car seats.
I wonder if Oman is kind of like the same distance, but just the opposite direction. Because I love Oman, girl. Oh my gosh. But how's the border? Is the border weird?
It's easy. It's easier than Bahrain.
Okay.
The way out is a little odd because they have like this kind of like a kiosk where you have to like go around a parking lot, park your car, and get in to this building. But once you do that, it's fine. Because you're in and then you're out and then coming back, unless you have tickets to pay, which Matt always does, it's pay your ticket and leave and you're done.
So where have y'all traveled since being here in 11 years?
Well, Matt and I both like to scuba dive. And when I was home with the twins, because I had to take that year off that they were born. They were born in September, so I worked up until like a week before they were born, and then I took the rest of that school year off. I was like, I can't do this. I need a break. And so we went I booked then when I was home with them, our first trip to the Maldives. And when we were there, they turned one. So they spent their first birthday in the Maldives. And then this sounds really crazy to say, but it's the truth. We've gone back every year since.
Right. And so I never really got the story of when you guys got trapped there, which is like so kind of odd. Like I was like, oh, I want to be trapped there.
So it was like a running joke because when we were locked in Saudi for COVID, there was a couple that got trapped in the Maldives and Matt and I were watching them. I think we were reading it through BBC. I think we were following their story. And Matt was like, yeah, rough them. And they had to like even move them to different islands and before they could get them out of the country. And they were on their honeymoon and it was Matt and I were laughing right here. We're stuck literally in our yard. That's the only place we can go. We can't even leave our house. You remember.
Girl, I was gone. No. I was locked out. Ugh. I was out and I couldn't get in.
Ugh.
And I swear to you, if I was, I would have been in the Rahima jail, girl, because I would have been. You can't tell me I'm not going on the beach. You can't give me a curfew. Oh, hell no.
It was no. So anyways,
y'all would have to bail me out.
So what happened was we didn't make plans for Christmas for some reason. I don't remember why. I think it's just because of like we didn't trust like COVID and stuff. Right. And it seemed like, oh, things are fine. It's not a big deal. Like people are traveling. Uh-huh. And so we booked a last minute flight to Mali and got on an island in the Maldives of a place we went. It was a great deal. It was like, yeah, let's do this. And while we were there, Saudi closed their border and shut down mm-hmm. because some strand of COVID, I don't know what mm-hmm. strand even what it was, but they closed their borders.
Oh my God.
And so when we were there, it was like not so funny anymore. And then I was like, let's just make the best of this. You know, remember the joke, remember the people honeymooning, let's just stay. And
right.
The traveling that we go through, she was like, sure, you can stay. There's a room, but the only room available where you're at, it would be Christmas. So it's like this massive suite with a butler. And it was like three times what we had just paid to be there, if not more.
Oh my God.
And Matt and I are like, no, we can't do that. And so she helped us find this other place, which actually is now our most favorite place there, because it was like this place in Panama, like this other place that we had gone when we used to travel through Panama. It was like more like a backpacker's place. Like it was a really small island. It wasn't like five star. They didn't have a kids uh-huh. club, but uh-huh. they had an amazing house reef. The people were so kind. The food was good. And it was just like everything we wanted for the right price.
Okay.
And so we spent a week there. And then Matt was like, we can't spend another week because at that point, and have their borders opened.
Oh my God.
And so we decided we were just going to go to Bahrain because, you know, that was an unbudgeted second additional week in the Maldives. And so we went to Bahrain thinking that they might open the border. And then we were in touch with. And she kept saying, I think they're going to open the border soon. I just stay. But mind you, at this point, we miss Christmas. Like all our boys' presents were here.
Right.
We miss Santa. Like we did the best we could. It was fine. The boys were troopers. And thank God I had wetsuits with because Bahrain was chilly. But our hotel had a pool. So it was kind of like being here during COVID. Every day we'd wake up at our hotel and I'd put the boys in their wetsuits and we'd go spend like 2 hours swimming at the pool until they were frozen. Matt would go work out and then we'd do lunch and then something else and movie night and call it a day. So we spent a week in Bahrain before the borders opened.
Yikes. Oh my God.
So all in all, we were stuck out just a little over 2 weeks. Good thing about it, though, because that was like an unplanned closure, is we actually got paid.
Right. I know people that were out for like months getting paid. Okay. Yeah. I was like, what? This is crazy.
Because it wasn't by choice. It's not like we were like, we didn't mm-hmm. go on vacation. Like they locked us out.
No, I know. And I mean, but like in America, like you don't go to work, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
I mean, or you have to use your PTO. So
paid us.
That was really nice.
They didn't pay people who were out on planned vacation. Like if you were out and you had gone to see your family for Christmas and you had planned to be out for the whole 3 weeks, you didn't get paid. But for us who had only planned to be missing a week of work for those other 2 weeks, we got paid.
I'm so glad all that's over. Oh my goodness. And we can just look back and laugh because it's just incredible the stories that I hear from people. Everyone had their own little drama.
I'm glad my kids were young because we were so busy.
Like, I'm sure they had a blast.
They bonded. The brothers, they bonded. And I think a lot of people ended up making routines within their lockdown.
Of course.
Yeah.
So Dave had a whole thing with the twins. They had TikTok day, and then they would have like they would each take turns making like family games for them to play. And then they had it. I mean, Dave had it all structured out.
You had to do something.
I know. It was wild. I couldn't get back in for 8 whole months. So I didn't see the twins or Dave for 8 months. And
that's
then
insane.
Me and Abigail were together for 5 months because she couldn't go back to Hawaii. Once she was able to go, and then I was able to, but what was awesome is I was actually able to work in the hospitals. So that was really neat. Like,
oh yeah, I remember that.
During COVID, you know, I wasn't ER or ICU. I don't have those skills. I was never really in like high acute areas like that as a nurse. So like they took me onto like med surge floors and medical tele, which are still kind of like highly acute, but nothing like ER or ICU. Yeah. So that was an experience I definitely will never, I don't regret that. I think it's pretty cool. I can like tell my grandkids about it one day.
Definitely.
But being separated like as a family like that. And I know there were so many other different families with different stories. Because people had kids in boarding school all over the world. And I mean, the stories that I've heard are just incredible.
Yeah, it was sad.
What people have had to go through. Yeah.
Hey, a non-COVID relating story. You'll like this one. So when we lived in Venezuela, our health insurance wasn't great. I mean, we had it. It covered costs. But we just were in the States when I was pregnant with Karu when he was born. And so I had to have Karu in the States and he was not coming out. And I did 27 hours of labor before the doctor was finally like, let's try to get him out. They tried to suction him, wasn't coming.
And this is your first baby.
That's my first baby. And so she was like, I'm sorry, I know you don't want this, but we're going to, for his own health and well-being, we're just going to have to give you a cesarean. So I had a cesarean by Karu. And then when we got the bill, it said that was cosmetic. It said it was not optional.
Oh.
So Matt and I fought it and lost. And we had to pay out of pocket for Karu. And so, and you know, healthcare in the States, it was quite a hefty check. And then we move here and find out we're pregnant with twins. And then the twins are born also via cesarean because there was no way. He's like, even if you do a VBAC and one, I can get one baby out, the other one's totally in a bad position. I would have to like manually turn him. And why would you do that to yourself? Why would you, why would you do a VBAC just to have a cesarean anyway? So the twins were born and we were waiting for our John Hopkins Aramco bill and it came like never. So our running joke for a long time was buy one, get two free.
Yeah. And there you go.
Crosby was born. And again, so now it's buy one, get three free.
Three free.
Yeah. So
how was your experience though, having babies here in Saudi? It was good.
I think having a baby is like having a baby anywhere in the world.
Okay.
So when I had Karu in the States, it was like a fancy, maybe that's why the bill was so high. It was like a fancy hospital. They had like a menu I could select off of and like it was a private room and it was really nice. He was stuck.
Right.
But I'm glad I had that experience because then when I went to have the twins, I'm like, oh, I've already had a cesarean and I absolutely loved my doctor. He was a Saudi guy. He was hilarious. He had gone to school in the States. He was absolutely fantastic. And he like, you know, Matt was kind of stressing. He was teary eyed and the doctor was like, you and I are going to go have a cup of tea. Your wife's fine. And he like took Matt by the shoulders and he was just such an amazing doctor, just a good person. But by the time I got pregnant with Crosby, he was gone. And I think Crosby's probably my most interesting birth because this is my third cesarean. So I get in there and Crosby's the only one who broke my water. So it wasn't a scheduled cesarean. They have me on the table and the doctor who was in there at the time, who was supposed to be doing my drugs. So the anesthesiologist starts having a fight with somebody in the room, an all out fight. Like screaming at each other. And
oh my gosh,
it's weird because here they kind of like their beds are a bit old, like outdated. And so it's not like the nice updated hospital I was in with Karu, but I mean, it's still the same. It's just dated. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And after they were done screaming at each other, like it was dead silent. And so by the time Matt walks in that room, because, you know, they have to scrub them up and everything first. By the time Matt walks in that room, he's like, what the heck is going on in here? Because I've never been in a room with my other kids where literally nobody's talking.
Like, and then, why is it so quiet?
And Matt said when he walked, and I can't see because I'm strapped on a bed. Matt said when he walked in, the anesthesiologist was like in the back corner. And he said every time, normally when you've had cesareans, the anesthesiologist is at your shoulder.
Right.
And so Matt just read the room and he starts cutting jokes. And it must have been real bad because then two doctors came in. And so Matt's like, oh, we have two doctors and we have, like, they're not telling us. And I can't say to Matt, well, yeah, they just had a big fight. Like,
I would have.
And the nurse is like patting my shoulder and whispering at me, this beautiful Filipino lady, it's going to be okay. It's gonna be
okay. She's like, they do this all the time. Don't worry about it.
And so that experience wasn't ideal. I mean, having a baby is having a baby. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had talked to another woman on the podcast. She came on and she had her baby in Riyadh and she was saying like they don't let the husbands in. It's not common, I guess. So like there's certain ones that do let like husbands in and certain ones that don't. I found that interesting. But it could just be cultural too.
Well, here's something interesting. So you know my doctor that I loved with the twins? He told me he couldn't give me a cesarean. He couldn't tie my tubes because it was haram and he could lose his license.
Oh, my word, girl. They will not give women hysterectomies here. They will just, I think that's very cultural. And that is so weird.
And I was like, and the rule is you can get your tubes tied after you've had three cesareans. Okay. Or if you have... your babies have a genetic reason. So if your babies are born with something genetically a matter with them and you don't want to have another baby because of that, those are the only reasons you can get your tubes tied.
Wow.
And so thank God that happened because now we have Crosby. But when I was pregnant with Crosby, and Crosby was born 1 week before my 40th birthday. And so when I was seeing a doctor, I had to go to a specialist because of my age. The doctor there, I was like, I definitely want my tubes tied, please. And I was like ready to fight for it. I'm like, this is going to be my third cesarean. And this was a pretty woman, also absolutely qualified, absolutely amazing. She was like, if you want this so bad, why didn't you just do this last time? You get pregnant so easy. If you didn't want to plan to have more kids, why didn't you just tie your tubes last time? And I was like, oh my gosh. I tried. And she's like, she was actually the head of the OBGYN department. And she said, I wish women would know if somebody turned them away, that they could still fight it. I would have signed off on your paperwork. And I was like, well, it was meant to be anyway. Cause
I'm
like, here I am.
Too late now. Good to know.
So, but, you know, the guy was adamant. He like, I can't. I will lose my license.
That is so weird. I know. They're yeah. It's strange here. So, like, when you came to Saudi, were you thrown at all by the culture? Or you were, like, good with it? I guess because we live on a question.
You know, I've never had a panic attack in my life. And I had my first panic attack my first week here. So, yeah, I guess I was a little thrown when we first got here.
Oh, wow.
And maybe it was jet lag. Maybe it was something else. But
probably overwhelmed.
So what they do or what they used to do is when you got here, they would, like, take you shopping so you could get everything you needed. And there were so many new teachers the year we arrived that they actually hired a bus. And then I had Karu with me. Mind you, he's 13 months old. And so we get on a bus and they brought us to IKEA.
Mm-hmm. Was it a Friday?
Yep.
Oh no.
Yeah.
No, the worst.
Evening. Okay. Friday evening.
Oh God. Lord have mercy.
And I have a stroller and we're in IKEA and it begins prayer time. And I'm not used to the smells of the perfume. Like I'd not gotten used to the Saudi perfume
aroma.
Yeah. And and everything just stopped. And it was so many people. And it was like closing in on me. And I was like, I can't get out of this building if there's a fire. I can't get the stroller out. And I had my first ever panic attack. And I could not calm down. And I was like, Matt, I have to catch some breath. I have to. And he's like, okay, go. And I'm like, not without that baby. Give me that baby. And I was just freaking out. And so grabbed the baby and left outside and left Matt with the stroller in the middle of IKEA. And
Were people looking at you crazy?
They were looking at me. I'm sure I had attention drawn to myself. I was really having a hard time. But they weren't like saying anything. They were just kind of watching me. They weren't disrespectful.
Right. they're like, that's a foreign woman. She'll get used to it.
And then of course we get on the bus and then some guy starts telling us about he was in the bathroom and he wasn't paying attention and he thought he was using a urinal, but he was using where the guys are supposed to be washing their feet.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I was quickly starting to feel better because we were laughing and I was like, oh my gosh. But honestly, I still can't stand IKEA. I still, to this day.
Okay, because you work, girl. But you gotta, like, I'll leave here by 8, get there by 9, it is dead. And then I can even get back, like, before lunch. Like, I remember when the girls were here, I'd get back before lunch. I'd get back by 11:30.
Huh.
I'd go to IKEA, get what I needed. It would be so quiet during the week. Or Saturday morning, if you get up early enough and get there, like when it opens, it's pretty chill. It's very quiet. Weekdays are the best, but if you can do a Saturday morning, it's also really nice and quiet.
No, I just send Matt now. Matt, we need something from he's on it.
Yeah, I love IKEA. I can kill some time in IKEA, girl. I got to take Shai Shai for her grooming on Sunday, and that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go walk around IKEA. I love IKEA. It is so great. But like I said, during the weekdays, it is just chill. It's super quiet. They have really nice bathrooms in there. When we used to take the shopper's bus, like us wives that don't work, we'd hop on the shopper before we could drive. We'd hop on the shopper's bus and we'd get off at IKEA. And then we would we couldn't buy anything like real big. But then if you had like bags, you just had to like haul yourself. We would just run across that big street between IKEA and the mall.
Oh yeah. Like Frogger.
We would run across the traffic and then get to the mall and do what we had to do to get, and then we'd sit down for lunch and then the bus would pick you up like outside of the mall there, one of the gates.
I've taken the shopper's bus on a Saturday before. I used to love it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going from place to place, you got to haul your crap, but you could always taxi too around. We just were like, screw it. Let's just run across the street. We don't have to taxi over there. But yeah. It's interesting. Some days I'm like, oh, I wish I had a job so I actually had focus and like something to do. The days probably go by really quick when you're working because they just roll one into the other. And I even when I wasn't working and I had the kids around, my days were super busy. And now that they're gone, oh my gosh, I'm like, I'm so bored. I'm going out of my mind. But
yeah, we don't. Yeah.
I reflect back on, you know, the days where I was so busy all the time and there was never enough time in a day. And I reflect on those days and how I just was exhausted. And so I just say to myself, you know what? This is like making up for that. Like, I'm, you know, like, it's okay. Like, take the moment, breathe, like, enjoy the free time, because there was so many years in my life where it was a blur. It's just a big blur.
Yeah, you earned it. You earned those beach walks. You earned your IKEA trip. You earned whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah. And then when I am stateside, you know, it's pretty nuts. It's back to psycho mode. So I try to take it in stride and enjoy it.
I listen to my friends who are teachers stateside and it blows my mind. Like, sure, I'm busy, but I'm not stateside busy.
Yeah.
I'm not like, literally, I have friends who leave work to throw clothes into the dryer because they put it in the washer before they left, and work's just 5 minutes away. So on their lunch break, they're running home just to throw a load in the dryer. And because in the evening, they have to run their kids to whatever activities. And and I'm like, oh, I don't live that kind of life.
No, ma'am.
Like,
no,
I got off work tonight and I got to enjoy a nice walk and take my dog playing and Like my life has, it might be crazy, but I also have a yin and yang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could always because you have your master's, I mean, you could even teach online. You could find a gig online. You could if you were to go back stateside, I mean.
Yeah.
Or even stay here and not work. I mean, I know a lot of teachers that will pull back teaching and continue to let the husband go for a few more years.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I really love my job. I really love going to work. I really love my students.
That's awesome.
So I'm not at all looking to cash in not working at this time. But I'm really not interested in doing this when we leave here. Mm-hmm. That's saying I know my shelf life and I'm counting my blessings right now, but I also I also know when it's over, it's over. Then again, life could have other plans for me. Who knows what's in store, but
what was it like teaching in Venezuela? I mean, were the kids all Venezuelan or were they other international students in Venezuela?
So we work for a Chevron-sponsored school. So it was an oil school because Venezuela oil. And we had kids from France. There was also a French school. We had kids from Venezuela, obviously. We had kids from Italy. We had kids from Lebanon. We had kids from the U.S., especially Texas. We had a family from the U.K.
Okay.
So there were some, it was some international, but it was more by what Chevron brought in. It was more through Chevron. And then the families that were Venezuelan that went to our school, they either had a lot of money and so they were paying a lot of money to be at that school or their family worked for the school, and by working for the school, then the parent got scholarship funds to cover the cost of their child attending that school.
Yeah.
The school was amazing. It's a gem. It's fantastic. It's lovely. It's just this little tiny school, K-3 through 12th grade. And I can't say anything bad about it. It was a great experience.
You're getting more Arab and Muslim kids here than you would obviously in Venezuela.
Yeah, I think we only had one family there that was Muslim that I remember. They were from Indonesia. But it made me such a better teacher because I've had a lot of kids in my class through the years who were learning English. So English language learners, their first language wasn't English. But in Venezuela, it was 90% of my class. And so you didn't have those native English speakers to help get you conversational English. And so it was a lot more of a challenge just learning to teach English to kids who basically their common language was Spanish. So they would just code right back to Spanish.
Right.
So it was really good. It made me a much better teacher. It was fun. Now, we people coming into Saudi, we have new kids at our school all the time. And basically in the last, I'd say 3 weeks, the new kids that we've gotten in, most of them are not strong in English. There's a few of the new kids that have come that are good in English, but there's the majority of them coming right now are brand new to English. And so having that in my back pocket, having that experience is helpful. I'll tell you this. I was just finishing up conferences, right? So we're in the middle of conferences this week.
Y'all half days. Yeah. I see all the kids around campus. I'm what y'all doing out of school? I'm it must be conference week.
Yeah. And something I've been telling my parents this week is not as a teacher, but as a mom, I feel so lucky that my kids are going to this school and part of the school system. People might have their opinions about the school and have their experiences where they make inform their opinions, but as an insider who's a teacher and a parent, and then knowing what's on the other side, I am on the side with the green grass, that's for sure.
I mean just the ratio alone, the amount of kids per class. I think my girls had 14 kids in their class. They were in first grade. I think that was how it was all the way, and then I think
it would go up a little bit from there, but not too much. I mean, I know like the classes actually are quite bigger now, but
yeah, they're a bit bigger. It depends on the grade level. I have 18 this year. Last year I had 24.
I always liked how the teachers, I guess I never paid attention before in public schools, because like here, I feel like the teachers wear a lot of different hats, right? Like certain teachers will teach, they'll either switch from year to year, or they'll like be, you know, like they'll head up like a club, right? Or a sport or something, like some kind of extracurricular something, because I don't know if like you have to do that, or if like people just want to do that, or
it's a little bit. I mean, it's an expectation, right? You don't have to. Yeah. You don't have to, but what makes the school? Because especially in the middle school, you don't have a lot of things for the middle school kids, so they really need the sports. They really need the coaches, and that gets into a little tricky. But at the elementary level, we just have lunch clubs, so. It's not a big deal to host a lunch club, and the kids don't get to eat lunch so at school normally. So the fact that they get to stay for lunch and then do something social with their friends while they're there, they're so excited. And
yes. Ooh, I would love lunch club days. I'd be like, ooh, you guys aren't coming home till after school. I don't have to see you all day. This is going to be a good day. No, I'm kidding. It would just be nice to like, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, today I don't have to have lunch for you guys. Okay, that's cool.
Because like, you can't really do anything. You get up in the morning, you go do something, then you're coming home to make lunch.
Yep.
Okay, then you go do something, you're coming home to help them get through homework or something. Like,
it's very split up. Yeah, for sure.
But for me, as a mom who's working, coming home for lunch is amazing because I get to eat this healthy lunch and I get to touch base with my own kids. And
it's so great. They get to come home, take their shoes off, relax, watch, maybe once they're gathered around the table, we get to chit chat, and then they can watch a little bit of TV before the bus comes back. Like, they just kind of get like that little respite. And when we first moved here, I remember thinking to myself how little we saw each other back in the States, and like, just having them home for lunch, we always gathered at lunchtime. Like, we may not have always gathered for breakfast, maybe on the weekends or dinner, but lunch was always like a guarantee we would be all at the table.
I read this book this summer. It was about, I can't remember the name of it. It was this, basically this book about kids who have everything, but they have so many psychological problems, right? And so it was about these kids that they don't have a want or a need. Literally everything is taken care of. They have so many high levels of depression and anxiety. And one of the things that the book talked about was they know that they have been able to prove hands down, kids who have dinner with their parents tend to be more mentally healthy. Like, it's a study that has a lot of backing. They can prove it. And then I think about us, like, okay, we don't have dinner together every night. We have dinner and we have lunch together. Like, so
yeah I mean it's such a shift from the American lifestyle from when we moved to here, and then now that they're gone, it's like we went from like spending so much time together, and like now we're just like all spread out, and like, so that's a whole new season when they get into boarding school, because then you're like, then you don't see them at all and you're like, oh.
Yeah, but well, think about the time you had. I mean, you guys really had quality time.
Yeah, it was great. It was so great for our family at that time. I think a lot of people come here just for that alone. I mean, I wouldn't see my husband. I wouldn't even see my kids until like 3 p.m. most days. And we would have like, what, maybe 3 hours together. But that was like cleaning up and getting homework done and, you know,
girl, you wouldn't see your kids if you were stateside until who knows what time, and all day long you'd be thinking, is there going to be an active shooter drill? Is everybody going to be okay? Are they going to get home okay? And like,
yeah,
I just can't even.
Yeah. It's true. So true.
Yeah. Cause we've been out of the States for more than 15 years. So a lot of that stuff, then changes of education that.
So your oldest is in the middle now, in the middle school now?
Yeah. He's a sixth grader. And then the twins are in third grade and Crosby's in first. And you want to know something funny? We've always said when Karu gets done with kindergarten, then it's time to go. The twins are so. Let's just hang on till the twins are done with kindergarten. Then it was COVID. Okay. We're not going to leave in the middle of COVID. So, all right. when Crosby's done with right. kindergarten, it will be time to go.
We're still here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then your oldest is going to start asking, because everyone starts looking into boarding school as early as seventh grade.
Well, Juan Pena, here's Yohani's husband. So last year, Karu was doing this project at school where he got to do anything he wanted. And he wanted to experiment what would happen to your body if you were to go to Mach 10. Like, what's G-force effect on your body?
Uh-huh.
So he had to go interview pilots, and he had this research he was doing. And Juan basically was like, so let me tell you about JJ school.
Yeah.
And Karu came home from this interview, and he was like, can we look up a boarding school? And I was like, what? And we looked it up, and it's right on the coast. And he was like, it's my two favorite things. JJ school has marine biologist and aviation.
Yeah.
Rue's interested in joining the services. So, and it feeds into the U.S. Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, that he was in fifth grade last year, and he was talking about that was not us.
Right. No, I know. I mean, Abby was like on her own. She found the Hawaii Prep Academy. She found that school and was like, this is it. This is where I'm going. There's a lot of scholarship money out there that people don't know about. Boarding school, I tell everybody, it's all about the fit for the kid. And if it's the kid and the school fit together, everything's going to be fine.
I think for us, for our family, it's just the number of years in Saudi. So, you know, already being here 12 years and only planning to be here 2. Like, boarding school seems like a very logical time to be like, peace out. It's time for us to go. Like, we're not going to do the boarding school thing. But then, like I say, Matt, are you going to really make that choice? I mean, if boarding school gives your child the future that they are trying to achieve, are you really going to be like, you could have a better life if I would just send you to boarding school? Like, you could reach your dreams easier and be the person you want to be versus like pulling you out and putting you into public education in the States.
It's definitely a discussion that you will continually have, and that discussion will continue to evolve.
Who knows?
And you gotta do what's best for you guys, you know? You gotta agree and just be in agreement. Comes with its sacrifices, that's for sure. Because then you're stuck here too. You can't be out. You want to be with your kid, but you can't because they're in boarding school. And
yeah, and you know, that might be a time for me to really think about teaching, because I've seen teachers whose kids are in boarding school, and it's really hard on some of them because they only get off like 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
So they can either do the drop off or they can do like the parent week. It's really hard on them. It's really hard on them.
And all the other breaks, you're schlepping your kid overseas on a flight by themselves back here because you don't have the time out.
Yep. And so then all of the breaks, or you're schlepping them to somebody else stateside that you.
Yes. Or so having having family ready and prepared to take them for those breaks. That's a huge factor. They're in it's a vulnerable position for sure. For a long-term gain and a long way, you got to keep that long-term goal and focus, because you know, like, they're getting like such quality, you know, like you said, it's just kind of like you can't beat the opportunity that presents to them through boarding versus public. So you kind of have to just take it all in stride. It's like, okay, this sucks, but then there's this. So what would be your favorite thing about Saudi Arabia?
I love the weather at certain times of year. Because I love being outside. I love Christmas here.
No, you do. I hate it. Okay. That's so funny.
I look forward to Christmas here. I love, you know, when we were in Venezuela, it was so hard to get in and out of that country. And we would always go home for Christmas. And then getting home for Christmas, it was like, all right, you go to Matt's family and then my family and then the winter weather would happen and people would get sick, and you know, it was so chaotic.
Right.
crazy.
So you like the like quiet, like no obligation, like type.
I love that I get to see the joy of Christmas through my boys because, you know, they've been so young here. So they've learned like what Christmas is and then everything about it and just the joy of opening presents and it's just us, you know, there's no cousins that you have to right. go see or grandparents that you have to go see. And so it's not that I'm against all of that family. I love my family. I love Matt's family. They're fantastic. But when you take away like, oh, I got to spend 2 hours here, which was my childhood. And okay, now we got to go spend 2 hours here and 2 hours yeah. here. And you just get to be, and it's gorgeous. So then you get to be outside. Every Christmas we go shark tooth hunting, you know, we just hang out and it's, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I love right. weather at that time of year. I don't usually take time off of work. So I love my me time. I get to go into work and I wrap Christmas presents sometimes like between little projects that the school has us doing and it's just chill.
Yeah, it is. It's very quiet. A lot of families leave, so it makes it even quieter. Okay, so what would be your least favorite thing about Saudi?
Also the weather, hands down. I love the weather and I hate the weather, but once it turns
yeah.
and it turns,
yes.
you can't ask right. for better weather. And it's honestly, so true. Have you been dipped your toes? When I dipped my toes this last weekend, the boys and I were on the beach, the water yeah. already changed.
Yeah, it's getting a little bit cooler. I think at this point it kind of it flips. It goes on and off.
Yeah.
And then like that Halloween is like the last one. And then from November it's like all good.
One of the teachers at my building says we have two seasons here. We have unbearably hot and we have flies. Those are our two seasons. Because what happens at the school is once the weather switches, then the flies descend and then we get flies coming in the doors and I literally walk around the classroom with my fly swatter.
Do you guys camp overnight?
We never have. Matt hates camping. He's been burned by camping too many times. So
Dave too.
It's not.
He's like, I need room service and like AC. He can't do it.
It's a shame because Matt has boys who would love to spend the night out there, but it's never going to happen unless I
think. Mm-hmm. Well, no, there's this, I'll have to send you a link. There's like a glamping thing in Riyadh that looks really great. It's like little domes and then they have like activities. I think you and the boys would love it. I'll send you the link. I've been following them for a while and I've been thinking about going up there to do it. If you had to give somebody advice about moving here, what would you say?
I would tell them to contact somebody who lives here before you make decisions. Like, for example, uh-huh. when we went to the Aramco building in Texas, and the lady who ran our class, she was like so adamant about having a shipment because at the time she was living here, I think that was very important. And she went, I think she talked probably 6 different times about making sure you get lamps. And Matt and I were laughing, like, we're like, we better get lamps in our shipment. Like, wait, did you get the lamps?
Yeah.
And then we got here and we went to IKEA and I was like, why did we send a shipment? Like, we would have right. been better to take at the time cash in lieu. And right. like, then of course we really didn't need. And now the shipment that we did send, that's all 110. None of that's going to work because yeah. everything's being converted to 220.
220.
So my advice would be, you know, contact somebody here that's living here if possible. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't need a shipment. We didn't. I mean, if things are really important to you, that might be a thing that you need. But, and when we leave here, I don't see us taking a shipment out of here. But
really?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I heard like the only like, because there's like just a few things I want to bring. Like, it's not a lot. Like, there's just like, well, I'm not. I've taken a lot of your time.
I've been talking to you.
Yes. I never get to like hang out with people. So, like, when I get to do this, it's just fun to kind of get more insight with people. I appreciate you doing it.
Okay. Well, thanks. And it was nice to chat with you. And I hope your girls continue to do well and thrive.
Yeah. Same with your boys. And enjoy the rest of your evening, baby doll.
All right. I got to go run the bath. The boys will be back from baseball any minute. My night off will be over.
Hurry. Okay.
Have a good night. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.